You're tuned to The Weekend, a weekly public affairs show which airs every Saturday right here on KTEP. Good afternoon. I'm Louis Sines, your host for The Weekend, and joining us today is Dr. Randy Chenault. Dr. Chenault is a veterinarian here in El Paso, and we're here to talk a little bit about what to look out for as far as your pet. You know, there are a lot of things that our pets can get into, and also the fact that some children may receive puppies for Christmas, and sometimes parents forget that those puppies grow up, and so they need a little bit more care. Randy, thank you so much for being with us.
Well, absolutely, Louis. It's a pleasure to be here, as always.
So first of all, let's talk a little bit about, during this time of year, what are some of the things that you see in your office?
Probably the biggest thing that we worry about this time of the year as far as problems related to the holidays, you know, obviously pets are curious and you have your Christmas tree set up, and a lot of times we'll see animals that get into the electrical cords is a big problem. Also, the possibility of having, you know, eating tinsel on trees. A lot of people use that stringy tinsel, and that's really encouraging, especially to cats. We have to worry about them getting some sort of a, you know, they eat that, and then it becomes a big major problem in their intestinal tract. You know, just they're curious and they want to get into the tree. They, you know, cats love to climb in trees, obviously, and many a tree has fallen over because of a cat or a dog knocking it down or eating ornaments or, you know, goofy things like that that pets tend to do. So,
and I mentioned earlier that, and we all forget, you know, it's cute to get our child, grandchild, or even our loved one a puppy for Christmas, but then that puppy grows up.
Sure, absolutely. And it is a commitment, you know, and fortunately, pets are living longer. You know, we're better at doing our job as veterinarians, and owners are better at their job as being owners, and the food and nutrition is so much better. So, yeah, I mean, we're talking in many cases, you know, well into their teens that these animals will live. And so it is a long-term commitment. And, you know, kids going away to college, you got to think about that. You know, let's get a puppy when we're younger in high school or whatever, and then pretty soon they're gone to college and mom and dad get to keep the puppy for whatever reason that's now an adult. So, but it is important to make sure that, you know, good health care is also, you know, get them in to see your veterinarian as soon as possible. You know, of course, vaccinations, we see quite a bit of parvo and distemper around here all the time, all year long, you know, and those are easily preventable with vaccinations. You know, spaying and neutering, being a responsible owner, that's real important as well.
And as you mentioned parvo, I'm glad you did that, because sometimes people have a misconception that you need that parvo vaccine only if you live like in the Upper Valley or somewhere near water.
No, absolutely. That is incorrect. Parvo vaccinations, number one, as a puppy, they should receive a series of vaccinations. In my office, I recommend vaccinations at 8, 12, and 16 weeks with annual boosters. And the reason being is that mom transfers maternal antibodies through the colostrum, through the milk, for some protection for puppies, but that lasts until about 8 weeks or so. And if they get a vaccination, that gives some help, but it's not a complete vaccination, and they many times will succumb to parvo based on the fact that they are not completely vaccinated. So,
now, are there any different city rules that people need to be aware of? Because, again, if they do get a puppy, they're going to have to register it with the city, correct, or the county?
That is correct, yeah. Current city laws require vaccinations of rabies right now. That's all they require, although these other vaccines that we talked about, distemper and parvo, are extremely important, or thank goodness, because they're not communicable to people at this point. That is the reason that they don't require – there's not a city ordinance, but rabies is a communicable disease to people. And unfortunately, many people do not get their dogs vaccinated, or if they miss out on vaccines, or they're not vaccinated and microchipped, the city does require a microchip as well. You know, you can be fined and your dog can be, you know, put in quarantine, and it's a mess. It's just easier to get it done.
So the microchip, has that been working rather well, and as far as, you know, for lost animals or something like that?
It does, and people are becoming much more aware of the fact that microchips are pretty readily in pets now. The microchip does not work unless it is registered to the owner. That's the problem. And many people get their pets microchipped, but they don't follow through and register with a database system like Home Again or Pet Watch or whatever it is. And a lot of these places, I mean, they can have a microchip, but it's kind of like finding a just a random series of numbers and letters. There's no actual information on that microchip. That microchip, the number that's on that is then tied to the owner through a national database registry. So it's important to get them microchip, number one, but more important to get them registered as well.
And once an owner has their pet microchip, is this a once a year thing, or is this something that has to be
No, it's a one-time deal.
One-time.
Fortunately, once you get them microchipped and registered, that's it. It's a one-time registration, and it's good for the life of the dog.
Sometimes somebody might have a puppy, I mean, actually a dog given to them, an older dog. And that's one of the situations that we see sometimes, as you mentioned, as dogs get older, they encounter different problems. So if somebody is given an older dog, what are some of the things that they need to be aware of?
Well, again, age dependent and everything else. Certainly, most of the problems that we see with older dogs generally are related to arthritis, chronic things like that. I mean, normally we'll see where, this time of the year when it's, although the weather's so beautiful right now, it's been a pretty crazy winter, so to speak, that we are here lately, been in the 70s, and now, it'll be an interesting thing to see. But most dogs, just like people, when the weather changes, they are susceptible to different, stiffness and soreness and that sort of thing related to arthritis. Other things, too. I mean, unfortunately, bad habits are ingrained usually, and they're harder to, you get an older dog, it may have, bad habits built in already, unfortunately, from the previous owner. They didn't train them right or didn't spend the time that was required in order to kind of keep them, get them trained the way that we would like to see them trained.
And as far as training the dogs and what you mentioned earlier about, it's been rather nice weather, it can get pretty cold. And as we know here in El Paso, it can get pretty hot as well. So give us some tips as far as how an owner should take care of their pet. Obviously, we always warn about not leaving them in the cars during mm-hmm. the hot day. But what are some of the other things? Because it's so sad to see somebody who has a dog, but that dog is always chained up and no exercise.
Well, exactly. And somebody that's chaining a dog, that brings up a whole lot of emotions on my part. I mean, I don't think any animal should be chained no matter what. The question, as to how to take care of them, obviously, when it's cold and it's, you worry about your plants and your pipes and your pets, those are the things that are real important. Obviously, they need a good environment, whether it's an insulated house, dog house type thing. Obviously, worry about their water. If their water freezes over and it takes a while to thaw out, they don't have access to water. That's a big concern. Ideally, pets should probably be indoors when it's really, really cold, like what we experience on occasion here. Same thing in the heat. Adequate shade and water, obviously, is an important part of the equation there. And obviously, hot cars are a situation we deal with every summer, and it is a sad situation because sometimes it is on accident. Somebody runs to the store or whatever, and it doesn't take but about 10 minutes for an animal to get really heat stroked out if we're not careful, because in the summertime, it gets really hot inside a car real quick.
This newsletter that I was showing you is from TheraPet Elder Care, and you're familiar with it, as you mentioned, and there are a lot of incidents. They're interesting tips they put here, and one of them is about pet poison tips, and one of the things they put here are, well, some of the things are involving holiday gifts, and one of them is imported snow globes, that some of these globes may contain antifreeze.
Exactly. On the inside, the liquid portion of that, I mean, if it falls and breaks and a dog licks that up, antifreeze is extremely toxic to animals, their kidneys. It takes about a tablespoon of antifreeze in order to kill an animal. It doesn't take much. So obviously this time of the year, that's a good point you brought up as well. If you're changing your antifreeze or you're, topping off your coolant or your antifreeze in the car and you have a spill in your garage, unfortunately, many times that does happen, and it's extremely toxic to their kidneys. And if caught early enough, there is an antidote that can be given. However, by the time symptoms usually start showing up in 24 to 48 hours, it's usually too late because the kidneys have been damaged.
I'm going to kind of go down the list here, and one of the other things is liquid potpourri.
Yeah, and I think a lot of that is just depending on what it is and what's in it. You have to worry about gastrointestinal issues with that. A lot of times dogs will, you know, it smells interesting to them and they will either eat it or lick it or whatever. So that's kind of a big concern. And any abnormal thing during this time of the year as far as foods and treats and that sort of thing, we see a lot of gastrointestinal distress, as well as around Thanksgiving time, excuse me, around Thanksgiving time with turkeys and things like that. People like to give their dogs turkeys and, you know, leftovers and whatever. And that's generally pretty well tolerated, although we kind of always see an uptick in vomiting and diarrhea dogs after Thanksgiving or Christmas or whatever. So probably better off not to do that. Dogs do well with consistency, so you keep them on the same kind of diet pretty consistently, they do much better.
Now, you mentioned earlier cats getting into the tinsil, and it's not that we're picking on cats, but cats are the ones who tend to do that. What about candles? People put up candles, and
sure.
So one of them, a cat might be jumping across the couch and knock one over accidentally.
Absolutely. I mean, not only knocking them over, but a lot of times the hot wax gets on them, and then, you know, they're, you know, I have seen that happen as well, where, you know, a cat will have wax, they come in with wax stuck on them. And so it's a difficult thing to deal with. I mean, usually we have to either just, you know, shave that off or whatever, because you can't melt it off, obviously. And it's one of those things. And, but it is a, fortunately, most of the time that doesn't cause any more damage other than, you know, the burning potential that you have to deal with hot wax. So.
And holiday plants, Randy?
Poinsettias are a big one, obviously. We see this time of the year. They do cause a potential for gastrointestinal distress as well. They tend to be, some dogs and cats will chew on plants just because. A lot of times that does end up to be causing some problems with their stomach.
Now, what about as far as taking a dog on a walk? We've heard different things about you need to have a long leash, you need to have a kind of a choke leash, or you want to have the dog walking parallel to you or behind you, not in front of you. And I guess there are different schools as far as that goes.
Yeah, and I think that I'm of the school of thought that, yeah, a dog should be kind of by your side, where you have control, obviously, you know, on those retractable leashes, those things that reel out about 40 feet, you know, and the dog is running around and, yeah, he's on a leash, but he's not controlled, you know, and that's not one of my favorite things because they can get into things. You can't stop them from eating something or you can't, you know, control them if another dog comes up and, you know, you're concerned about the, you know, a potential for a fight or whatever. So I do like a standard lead, you know, 6 feet or whatever is fine. But I think your pet should be well-trained like that and should be able to heal, you know, while walking by you.
And as a veterinarian yourself, do you mostly see cats and dogs or do you see other animals as well?
We in my practice only see small animals, but there are lots of mixed animal practitioners in El Paso. And of course, equine veterinarians, large animal veterinarians, dairy veterinarians, a whole slew of different veterinarians that are out there. I mean, we have quite a mix here. So it is something that we do see, you know, different types of animals. However, you know, it's gotten to the point where we do just small animals at this point. So
no, we interviewed you and one of your colleagues, I guess about a couple of years ago, may not be aware, and I was not aware that there was an emergency room where your colleague worked. And so what are some of the things that people may need to be aware of? Okay, if something happens to their pet over the holidays and, you know, your offices are closed or another office is closed, what do they need to do? Is there a special number they call or a special place?
There is. Here in El Paso, the Animal Emergency Center is over on Airways, and they are available when we are not. So they are in the book, and they are readily available. They're staffed with a very good group of people over there. I wholeheartedly trust them with any issues that should arise, so with my clients. So I'm totally in agreement with that. I mean, those guys are really, really good folks over there.
And I would imagine that they've seen quite some interesting cases.
Oh, I can imagine. Yeah. I mean, there's all kinds of different things that you, you know, animals are interesting and they will, every time I think I know what animals are going to do, they always prove me wrong by doing something that I've never even thought of. I mean, crazy things that they get into, crazy things that they will eat, or it's quite interesting. You know, I mean, some of the things that we've taken out of animals, socks and ropes and toys, and you know, you wonder what compelled an animal to eat that, but yet at the same time, you know, they do, and they, you know, sometimes fortunately, you know, when we take them out, they do well, but it's just like, man, you know, what caused that?
The holidays are a time to get together with our family, and sometimes they may include traveling. So if someone is considering taking their pet on a trip, whether it be in the car, bus, or an airplane, what are some of the things that they need to prepare for?
Yeah, good question. I think that during this time of the year, obviously, traveling is a big deal, and obviously delays can happen. So you need to be prepared. You know, you might want to take some extra food with you, not only obviously when you get there, but maybe during the day of travel. If your pet's traveling with you in the airplane or in the car or whatever, you need to stop, obviously, at any time of a break when either you have a layover or you're traveling and you can stop at a rest area, let your pet get out and walk around, offer them food and water, that sort of thing. Make sure you have plenty of their medications. Don't forget, you know, their medications as well as people's medications. If they're on some sort of medication for whatever disease or diabetes or whatever it may be, make sure you have all their required medications. Probably want to take their vaccine records just in case something were to happen and they needed to be seen by someone or you needed to board them somewhere where you got there. You know, checking with your veterinarian as well to see about getting a pre-travel exam to make sure that they're healthy, that there's no problems. The other thing is make sure that your carrier, whether it be an airline or a bus or whatever you're going on, see what their requirements are for pets. Sometimes they have different things. They want to be seen. They need to have a health certificate or a, you know, pre-exam check or whatever it is. Make sure that you check under that plenty of time before. There's at getting to the airport when you're rushed to try and get to the holiday family to find out you needed something from your veterinarian yesterday or 2 days ago or whatever can be a problem. So, you know, pre-planning is big.
And some people may travel abroad or, you know, even going across the border. And I would imagine that you need to be aware of some of the rules other countries have.
Absolutely. And that's kind of what we were talking about. You can check if you are traveling to a foreign country, I mean, check with their consulate, see what their requirements are. I do know that a lot of people travel back and forth across the border here. Most of the time, there's not much requirement. I mean, occasionally they will check for, you know, their vaccine status to make sure that they're current on that and registered. Really, here locally on our border, I don't think there's a lot of big concerns that a lot of people have. I mean, I think it's important to keep your documents with you for your pet just to make sure that everything is okay.
You mentioned diabetes earlier, and this is something that, you know, ironically, we talked to a doctor last week about people, of course, and how prevalent diabetes is here along the border. Some people don't even think about the fact that their pet may come down with something like a heart problem, cancer, or diabetes. Tell us a little bit about, you know, what are some of the things that people need to watch out for, or what are some of the things that they need to tell their vet if they suspect that perhaps, you know, something is wrong with their dog, like diabetes?
Yeah, I mean, diabetes is one of those things that we see quite a bit of here in El Paso, too. I mean, and it's interesting. You know, we don't know for sure to the total extent whether this is a genetically linked thing. Sometimes we think that in people, or whether it's just, you know, environmentally induced, because diet in dogs is generally pretty controlled. But it is truly in dogs we see a truly insulin-dependent diabetes. The oral medications and things don't work. Symptoms of diabetes generally, usually they're drinking a lot of water, urinating quite a bit, they're losing weight. Maybe not feeling really good. In later stages, when they get into acidosis, ketoacidosis, sometimes you'll see them vomiting, getting really sick and not eating. So it runs the whole gamut of things. But again, I think that, you know, anything out of the normal with your pet, most people are pretty well in tune. And when they notice something that is not correct, that's a good indication not to just put it off and see if it's going to get better. bring them in and let's check it and make sure that things are better. You know, we can make them hopefully catch it early before it becomes a problem.
And are there certain diseases that certain breeds are prone to?
There are certain, you know, we think about different, certain breeds have different things. I mean, and you can kind of, I mean, for instance, poodles, a lot of times we'll see a heart problem in poodles that as they get older, just because it's a genetically predisposed thing. And certain breeds, we do see Kevlar King Charles Spaniels that will also have heart disease, you know, and it's just interesting things that, you know, we think about on each particular breed. You know, the bigger, larger breeds, we think about arthritis and hip dysplasia and inability to, you know, as they get older to be as to move as freely.
Somebody told me one time, and I had been meaning to ask you, every time I see you, I forget, because I have chronic pain and back aches. Mm-hmm. Are dachshunds prone to have problems with their spine?
You know, any dogs that are long and low to the ground is what I always say. I mean, you know, and dachshunds, of course, fit that. But, you know, basset hounds, those sorts of guys that are kind of built just like a big dachshund, yes, they are. And it's not so much that I think it's just the physics of on their spine and the way that things work. And so, yes, it is. We do see more chronic problems with those kind of dogs. Fortunately, there's a lot of great medications out that help with the inflammation. There's also therapy laser that helps a lot on those kind of guys that we use to kind of relieve inflammation and pain and swelling. And so there's a lot of nice modalities that we have now in addition to not only anti-inflammatory medications, but we do have some good pain medications that are out there too.
I think it's the bulldog, and correct me if I'm wrong. It's a big dog. It's about this big. But I've noticed that when a friend brought a couple of them over to my neighbor's house, it's like they were struggling to breathe. Is that something that happens all the time?
It's not uncommon. And any of those dogs that have kind of the short nose dogs, the little, you know, boxers, bulldogs, pugs, you know, all those guys, they have their nasal passages are compressed, if you will. They're kind of smashed in. The dogs have been chasing parked cars kind of thing is what we say. And they end up where, you know, they have a difficulty breathing, and they do have an elongated soft palate in many cases. And what happens is when it does get hot, animals cool themselves by breathing, and that's one of their major ways of, you know, getting cooled off. And if they can't move a lot of air because of these things that we're talking about, they do overheat, and it is difficult for them to breathe, and they make that really loud breathing sounds, and it is somewhat it's dangerous here in El Paso when it gets hot.
Now, as traveling again, we see a lot of people with their pets. Sometimes the driver has them on their lap, and sometimes the dog's in the back, but they like the window they open, and I guess the concern would be is how far should your window be open, and is it okay to have it? Because I'm afraid that perhaps there might be a curious animal who just all of a sudden jumps out.
They do. They will bail on occasion, depending on what it is. And that is a concern, and I'm not big on that. I mean, the other thing that I worry about is as they're going down the road with their head stuck out the window, I mean, you know, you got foreign bodies that come flying in, and they can hit their eyes, and, you know, those are big, you know, obvious concerns. And of course, you know, the back of pickup trucks, everybody's, you know, that's really not a good thing to do because of the same reasons, you know. And it's unfortunate, but we do see animals that do, you know, jump out of vehicles moving quickly, you know, at high speeds. And there's a lot of fractures and trauma and everything associated with that, of course. So not a good idea.
We're visiting with Dr. Randy Chenault. Dr. Chenault is a veterinarian here in El Paso on the east side of a town, and he's been telling us a little bit about some of the things to watch out for during the holidays to make sure that our pets are safe and also to make sure that your children or adults are safe. Now, as far as traveling, Randy, one of the things that the people sometimes get concerned about is the age of the animal. And as you mentioned earlier, that, you know, they may have arthritis or something else like that. Traditionally, like if somebody adopts a dog, let's say from the rescue shelter or something like that, do they pretty much have an idea as to how old that dog is and what to do?
Sometimes we have a pretty well-educated guess, depending on, you know, the way their teeth are. But unfortunately, if they're an adult, it's difficult to tell at times exactly how old those animals are. We can make a guess based on what we see But it's still just a guess, unfortunately, unless you happen to know, you know, when they were actually born for whatever reason.
And I'm not sure if you see any of these dogs in your practice, but we used to see CNI dogs, but now we see a lot of therapy dogs for some of our soldiers with PTSD. But then you see other dogs for anxiety or stress. And as you all know, we've talked about this in past interviews, dogs who are used to kind of help elderly people in as far as company.
Yeah, there's all kinds of dogs that are out there. There's actually dogs that are trained to kind of predict or, you know, be aware of like seizures. In some people, they call them seizure dogs. They're actually, you know, for people that are experienced epileptic type seizures, they can predict many times and know. But yeah, there's a lot of different types of therapy animals out there, and as a big general group, I mean, all the way from, you know, the assisted people with, you know, people that don't have vision to, you know, like you said, the PTSD, the stress, the anxiety, the many different things. So, and animals are just great anyway. I mean, they just help relieve blood pressure and stress and anxiety and give us a reason to be, you know, be happy every day.
At the beginning of the interview, we discussed about the fact that over the holidays, someone might want to consider giving someone a pet. And again, it depends on, you know, where you live, what part of the city, what part of the country. But if somebody is considering giving a puppy to their loved one for Christmas, tell us a little bit about what they should look out for. And of course, one of the big no-nos are puppy mills.
Yeah, and I don't think those are as prevalent as they used to be, but I mean, they still exist. The big thing about pets for gifts should not be an impulse thing. I mean, obviously you need to think it through. Make sure that whoever you're giving this pet to actually wants a pet. I mean, unfortunately, that happens sometimes where people are given pets because well-meaning people think that that's what somebody needs. But unfortunately, not everybody is ready for a pet for whatever reason. So, it should be extremely important that, you know, you sit down and have a discussion prior to. Obviously, if it's for your kids during this time of the year, then that's something that both parents should be involved in and probably, you know, preclude the kids into this thing so that they will kind of lead them up to this knowing that, hey, there's a bunch of responsibilities that they're going to be responsible for as well.
We've been visiting with Dr. Randy Chenault. Dr. Chenault is a veterinarian here in El Paso, the east side of El Paso. And Randy, I know you used to have a pool. That was a cool thing that you have at your office.
Yeah, a little therapy pool there.
And so now, is there ice skating right now? Or?
No,
I guess not right
now. Not right now, yeah. They're hard to put the blades on the dog. Yeah. So, I mean, no. But we still, for our boarding and our play yard on the side, we have, you know, when they're there, and that's what we do. Obviously, this time of the year is a big time of the year for boarding animals, and so it's nice to be able to provide that service for everybody when they're out of town and keep their dog safe.
If there's something that we did not cover, Randy, that our listeners might be interested, is there a website that you have that people can go to?
Yeah, absolutely. You can go to the epvma.org. That is our El Paso Veterinary Medical Association. There's a lot of information there. Also on the from the Texas Veterinary Medical Association, we have a website called that has a bunch of different information for pets called texvetpets.com, and it's extremely informative as well with different diseases, different problems, different things. If you have questions, that's a good place to go.
Randy, thank you so much for taking the time to be with us here today, and Merry Christmas and Happy New Year.
Thank you, Louie. Merry Christmas to you guys, too, and good always being with you.
Thank you. The Weekend is taped and produced at the KTEP Studios, University of Texas at El Paso Communication Building. Our thanks to our engineer, George Morales. Our producer is Lauren Terrazas. You've been tuned to The Weekend. I'm Louis Sainz.